Okay, so we're now going to go across and say good afternoon. Welcome to Professor Owen Dean. Professor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Well, I must say, if this is ever a story of David and Goliath, I think it's definitely the case.
Yes, it certainly was. It was quite a daunting task to take on the giant of the entertainment industry, namely Walt Disney, and happily the outcome was successful. The giant was felled with the stone.
Now, the initial reaction from what I've read is that Disney did, of course, react quite aggressively initially, but settled the case before it went to trial. Just as a matter of interest and purely, a ballpark figure on the amount, I mean, 200 copyrights, Disney's rights over that, must have been substantial, I would imagine.
Well, you know, the case was settled, as you pointed out, and one of the terms of the settlement agreement was that the financial considerations should be kept confidential or secret at all times.
Fair enough.
So my lips are sealed, I'm afraid.
That's fine. But one of the key things here was that the song was actually it was also part of the settlement, that The Lion Sleeps Tonight was acknowledged of being in South African origin and rooted in South African culture.
Yes, that is fair. We insisted upon that.
Okay, so I mean, from our point of view, at least now, I mean, all of us here in South Africa know that song, whether you know it in Zulu or Sotho or English or Afrikaans, it really makes no difference. But interesting that I think very few of us actually knew the history of it, and least of all the fact that of this particular case.
Yeah, it was a very little known fact, and it was a major achievement to get the acknowledgement that it had South African origin, and moreover, to get acknowledgement that Solomon Linde was, in fact, one of the composers of the song, albeit of an earlier version of it. Whereas previously it had been designated as being a song that had an American origin and had American composers. And it came as a surprise to almost throughout the world that it was, in fact, a song of South African origin. And if you listen to the various versions of the song as it sort of evolved from Mbubi through Wimaway to The Lion Sleeps Tonight, there is a very common theme to all of them. So, I mean, there's no mistaking the fact that The Lion Sleeps Tonight is really just a version of Mbube.
Yeah. Okay. Now, just from your point of view, what was the motivation for you to take this on? Now, I know the family were obviously seeking assistance in reparation for all of this, but what was the inspiration for you once you'd seen? How did you make contact with the family? How did the two parties actually come together?
Well, the whole story started with Rian Milan writing an article which was published in the magazine Rolling Stone, which is sort of the gospel of the entertainment industry. And this was back in 2000. And he had somehow come across this sort of hard luck story and had written this article, which really sort of got the message over quite strongly that here was an extremely successful song generating vast sums of money, but the originators of the songs or the family of the originator were earning nothing and, in fact, living in poverty. And, of course, the whole, what happened was that the song was composed in the 1930s, and in the 1950s, Gala Records took assignment of the copyright, took transfer of the copyright for the princely sum of 10 shillings. And then shipped it off to America, and then it went on its merry way. And this all emerged from Rian Milan's article, and it did not cast Gala Records in a particularly favorable light. And come 2000, in the new South Africa, Gala were somewhat embarrassed to be cast as the villain of the piece. And they then, Gala was a client of mine, they then came to me and said, look, we want to do something about this. We want to see whether there's some reparations that can be made to the family. And they asked me to investigate the whole situation and to do an opinion, which I did. And this ultimately then gave rise to Gallo deciding that they wanted to prove this point, namely that Solomon Linde was the original composer and that he ought to, in fairness, or his family, ought to be receiving royalties. And so we embarked upon this whole exercise, but initially there didn't seem to be any real legal merit to the argument, because Solomon Linde had really given away or transferred his rights, divested himself of his rights, and that was a difficult hurdle to overcome. And this is where this 1911 imperial copyright came into the picture. And that was a very little known provision of the law. In fact, you know, the 1916 Act, our 1916 Act, which incorporated that 1911 Act, had been repealed twice over already. And so nobody gave us a thought at all to what that act said. But because of a quirk of copyright law, which is to the effect that the ownership and the term, the duration of the copyright in a work is determined by the copyright law which was in place at the time when the work was made, in other words, 1930 in this case, determined that those issues forever. So we were able to rely on this redundant, almost obsolete provision and argue that, in fact, the copyright had reverted to the heirs or to the executor, and we could pursue the case on that basis.
Well, I must say, definitely a David beating Goliath again. Now, just the other thing as well, Awakening the Lion, your book sells, you can get the people interested looking at, can get it on ebook format, available on Kalahari.com and Leisure
yes,
Books.
That's right.
And I think there are different versions as well of the Song Through Time, and there was a review by Kubus Uister as well. I have the web address, so we'll put that information up on our website.
Yeah, well, I'm currently a professor at Stellenbosch University, and we have a chair of intellectual property law, and we produce a website and a blog. And as a Kurvis Uister, who's a colleague of mine, has done a review of the book on the blog and has incorporated in the review a lot of the background material, including renditions of all three versions of the song. So if any of your listeners are interested, they can hear for themselves how similar these songs are and how the song evolved through its different phases. And they can do that by searching the word IPSTELL, that is IPSTELL, on Google, and they will come out at the university's or the chair of intellectual property's website and blog, and there they can hear for themselves and see some of the other interesting background material which is available.
Well, thanks very much. Professor Dean, great job and good one there. I think well done finding that act and getting the rightful reparations back to the family. Always great to have positive stories, and thank you for joining us here on Chai FM.
Thank you very much. You're most welcome.